Hey there, folks. Welcome to the edition of Stranger in a Southern Land. I, of course, am your host, Jake Manning. Today on the program, I speak with a man who has been my rival. He has been my Raven to my Tommy Dreamer. That is John Schuyler, the Southern Savior, John Schuyler. And, you know, we really get into it, guys. Like, we get into it pretty deep. And I want to say pretty tight-lipped on this intro because I feel like we've overturned a lot of stones. And if you've known me and John's history, even if you're a pro wrestler, you're probably pretty surprised that we appeared on camera together to have a hour-long conversation much like this. So staying very tight-lipped on this intro because I want to get through it as quickly as possible so we can get into the podcast itself. But as always, I can't forget and I can't neglect to tell you how proud and how happy I am to be part of the Shining Wizards Network. And make sure you support them at shiningwizardsnetwork.com. Also, too, if you're thinking about starting a podcast, if you're thinking about any audio services that you need, if you're like, you know what, this Jake Manning guy, you know, I kind of want what he has. He must be a genius or something like that. No, not the case whatsoever. There's a man who makes me look like a genius and makes me look like a pro every single week on this program. And his name is Don. He is my producer. And if you want his help and the fact that he can make Jake Manning look like a pro, he can make you look like a pro. So make sure you want any him for any of your podcast services. Make sure you log on to dsct.tv for all of those services that Don can provide for you, including other audio services. He's great. He's a master. He's a wizard. Go look him up at dsct.tv. Now, I've just got a couple dates. Just want to feed him to you. Some comedy ones I really, really want you to show up to and come see. Most specifically, if you're listening to this podcast in a very timely manner, this Thursday, December 29th, I will be hosting, emceeing the Monstrous Comedy Show featuring Dave Stone, guys. I lost my shit last week about, like, all the credits this man has. He's been everywhere, and I highly recommend that you show up to the Evening Muse this Thursday to see Dave Stone at Monstrous Comedy. Also, too, Jordan Scott Huggins will be performing. He was a local favorite. He went up to New York, and I was coming back for this show. Also, Spencer Taylor, Nick Alexander, and, of course, you get to see me as well. So make sure you are at the Evening Muse this Thursday, December 29th, for Monstrous Comedy. For more information about that show, make sure you log on to eveningmuse.com. And when you're on eveningmuse.com, you will see that the All Organic Open Mic returns January 7th. It is 11 p.m. show. And tickets are only $3, guys. And I'm telling you, it's going to be late. It's going to be raucous. It's going to be wild. I highly recommend that you show up for the All Organic Open Mic Saturday, January 7th at the Evening Muse. For more information about that show, eveningmuse.com. Also, too, if you want any other information about what I'm doing or other performances or cool things or other podcasts that I got going on, you can just follow me on Twitter at ManScoutManning. ManStout, that might be a beer company. If you're into alcohol, that's where you go. But if you want to know about more podcasts, comedy, and professional wrestling, at ManScoutManning. Or on Instagram at ManScoutManning. If you have a question about the podcast, make sure you email me at jake@sslshow.com. Or if you can book me for an upcoming wrestling event, make sure you email me at manscoutmanning@yahoo.com. Now, like I said, I wanted to get to this as quick as possible. I think I did a good job because here I have the Southern Savior, John Schuyler, here on Stranger in a Southern Land. John, thank you very much. We're in the middle of like a very busy day and, you know, we're setting everything up right now. So thank you for sitting down and talking with me today.
Thank you for having me.
This is going to be very interesting because I've wanted to have this conversation for like a little bit, mm-hmm. but you know, we couldn't appear on camera together for quite some time for obvious reasons.
Couldn't send each other social media, anything.
Did you see Brad Stutz's tweet that got a little bit of traction where like wrestling, if wrestlers from the 80s talked the way they did now, where it was like at Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah.
Or like Flair, one heck of a guy. You guys should be booking this kid.
Yeah. Yeah. Right after they broke Dusty's arm, you know, what a great angle we just filmed tonight, boys. I can't wait to see what we do next week.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I hate that. Yeah. I've hated that. That's why I think that's why we got along almost by accident, in a sense.
Yeah.
And it really has been by accident. But like, I knew you back when you were a fan.
Sure.
You know, back on those CWA shows in Columbia.
Yep.
Like, how were you like a lifelong fan, or how long you've been like interested in wrestling in general?
Oh yeah, for sure. Like as far back as I can remember, like me and my brother, I have one older brother. We grew up in Blythewood, South Carolina, and we didn't have a lot of necessarily things to do out when you're that far in the country. So,
well, how big was Blythewood?
Blythewood.
Blythewood.
Yeah,
excuse me. No, it's cool. your town's about as confusing as my real last name.
It was. It's relatively a small town, but over the years, it's kind of grown in population, and you know they put in new schools and.
Well, what population are we talking about?
I don't know. Maybe like 5,000 ish.
Oh, I got you beat. 82.
Okay. All right.
It's still a competition.
Okay. Well. Yeah, just a lifelong fan. I remember the first time ever seeing it, where I was actually hooked. Now, I can remember me and my brother. Like my brother, kind of grew in and out of things where he would like G.I. Joe, and then he grew out of it, and then he got into like Ninja Turtles and grew out of it, and then he got into pro wrestling and grew out of it. And I wanted to do everything my brother did because I wanted to like hang out with him and his friends. And so, you know, the one thing I never grew out of was pro wrestling. So I remember seeing like Piper and Jake and all these guys back in the day. But the time that I actually got hooked watching wrestling was one of those early Monday Night Raws. They open up the show with Mr. Perfect and Shawn Michaels, and they're fighting in the streets of New York City. And like Perfect takes Michaels and bills him through the windshield of a car. And then it's just like all this mass chaos. And I remember like being 5 years old or whatever it was and just going like, what did I just see? Like, I guess it was like my Piper Snuka coconut moment right there.
Like an obscure WWF angle that got swept underneath the rug in the mid-early 90s.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it was obviously not as impactful as Piper and Snuka, but I mean, that left a long like impression on
the
me.
Matches were at least better.
Yes, the matches were, yeah. Well, I don't know, like Perfect and Shawn had a weird
chemistry together,
because they were both leaders.
Yeah.
And so I think they kind of butted heads in chemistry just a little bit, but they were both obviously phenomenal and two of my all-time favorites. So, but yeah, lifelong fan. And then when I got around to the college years, I was kind of in and out. I was still following wrestling every week, but then I found out about independent wrestling through just commercials. The CWA was a company in Orangeburg and Columbia, and they're still around. But
are they?
Yeah, they are. They are. And I remember I was sitting at home, I think, watching like an episode of Raw or something. A commercial came on. It's like, come see Rhino and Buff Bagwell and the Steiner Brothers.
That's another thing, too. Like, those shows back in the days, and especially like they were like around in like the 07, 08, 09, like in the really bad times of like indie wrestling and stuff like that. But they were like drawing large crowds, and I think they were ahead of the game in the sense that they had like a really nice entranceway. So, like, the appearance of professional wrestling was like, you know, very, very well done. Some of the wrestlers you could take or leave, you know, that were local.
Some were buddies of a promoter.
There's a few of those out and around.
For sure.
But, you know, maybe that's how I snuck on the show. But they would bring bigger names in and then have this nice entrance way, and they spend a lot of money on pro wrestling in a time when people weren't making money on it.
Sure. And they also had a guy, Dusty Jackson. I don't know if you remember him or not. He was the video producer that put together all the, like, the TitanTron videos and the backstage vignettes and stuff, and like the opening montage and everything. And Dusty was just super talented too.
Yeah, he was filming like HD like in 07 when nobody on the indies was really doing it. Everybody was still in the SDs. I mean, High Spots used tape up until like 2012. That was like, but five years earlier, he was like coming in with these huge crates and like, you know, making everything top notch. He'd make your entranceway video like literally in 5 minutes, just an After Effects, and then pop it up.
Yeah. But me and one of my college buddies, we used to come to all the CWA shows, and we'd actually help put up the ring and stuff, and not because somebody made us or anything. We were just curious. We wanted to see how we could get involved and help out and help our local independent promotion grow. And that's the first time I actually saw you was, you know, you were doing the Man Scout thing there. And I remember like that just kind of, it was something different on the show. And I remember like everything from the entrance to with John Mellencamp and, you know, the look, and obviously the Scout manual.
Well, it was only like 15% of the actual product that's out now. It was like a very crude beginning. Like, you got to see like the beta test of the Man Scout.
But I loved it. I really did. And I'm not just saying this to blow smoke either. I mean, it was something that was definitely, unique and different, and I think people will be talking about it for a very long time.
Yeah.
Not to toot your horn here.
Maybe they'll be stealing it sometime in the near future.
I heard they tried already.
Unsuccessfully.
Yeah.
Unsuccessfully. But, like, I remember you were part of this, like fan group called the Box Boys.
Yep.
What was that about again?
So, at the beginning of every CWA show, they had this thing where they would try to rile up the crowd, get them pumped up, and all that kind of stuff, where they would have a box full of just crappy merchandise. It'd be like the bottom of the barrel stuff that you would see on any gimmick table, like mouse pads and, mm-hmm. you know, just the worst crap. Like,
yeah, because they would just slap their logo on everything.
Yeah, cheaply made t-shirts, like hats. Mm-hmm. So they were throwing out all this merch. All the fans are going crazy. And then, like, there's no more merch. And I was like, we were both like, screw it. Give us the box. Throw us the box. We want the box. And then, like, the box that all the merch came in, and they threw it to us. And the whole show, we just, in a lame attempt to get ourselves over, we're like telling the guys to use the box as like a weapon. And I think it was like Timber or somebody had like a no DQ match, of course. And yeah, we were like, you know, you should use this thing as a weapon. And they finally did. And like, he came over and used the box, and the place exploded. It was awesome. It was like my first real big pop in wrestling. I wasn't even
like
trained.
I did that. yeah. So, you're welcome, Timber.
Yeah. You're welcome, Timber. I helped get you over. But yeah, man, it was just like a little, I don't know, cult thing. Like, and now, like, I think they still do the same thing, and it's like a CWA tradition where they throw out the box now. So
you know how to get over.
I'm changing the business day by day.
You know, meeting the Man Scout thing, you in the box thing, you know, just revolutionizing the business.
Right, man.
But what was it? So you actually saw, you were able to see an independent show and see a clear line on how you could do it. Because, like, mm-hmm. for me, like, getting into pro wrestling, it seems such a like a far away possibility. Like, the only way that I knew how to get in professional wrestling was I play football at Miami. Jim Ross sees me do a bench press a couple of times. I give a couple arm drags, and then I'm,
Send the tape to Jerry Briscoe.
Then I'm, you know, in Madison Square Garden as Rocky Maivia.
Right. Blue chipper.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's the progression on how to be a pro wrestler. But did you see any of those pieces together, or where you go, or how you put it together? Like,
well, it was also very confusing for me, believe it or not. Like, when I was going to those shows, Timber one day just decided, he was like, hey, you ever want to get see what it's like to be in a ring or whatever? And I was like, yeah, sure. So I took a couple, he got me in there, and I took a couple bumps. Taught me how to, like, lock up, take an arm, whip somebody off, all that kind of stuff. And then before every show, he would do a little bit more of that. Like, he would get me in the ring and, like, but then eventually you just kind of get kicked out because all the guys have to use the ring to go over their stuff.
Stretch out and whatever.
So as I talked to him, I was like, well, man, you know, I really want to do this. Like, this is something I've always kind of wanted to do. And he goes, well, I think you should. Like, you're actually – seem to have a knack for it or whatever. And I go, but I think if I'm going to do it, I want to do it right. I want to get trained somewhere. I can't just come up before shows and just roll around. I would like to continue to do that, but it's not how you're going to get trained. So then I did a little bit of research. I asked around. I came across Bob Keller's school in Columbia and got in touch with him, and then that's where I started actually getting trained.
Let me close this door real quick before we talk about how much we love Bob Keller. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Sorry about that. But no. But Bob Keller, one of my favorite people on the planet.
Bob's the man.
He's the fucking man. And I don't think a lot of people like put him over enough. Like,
right.
I always refer to him as like the go-to guy.
He is. He can literally get anything you need done, whether it's a license, whether it's a promoter's license, wrestler's license, a number for a building.
Yeah.
An inquiry on a ring, a cage, seats, guardrails, Bob's the man. He can get anything done for you.
Yeah, you need those go-to guys in those situations because, like, in a pro wrestling event, there's so many hitchpin things out there in the world. Like, all it takes is just one thing to be pulled out, and then, like, the whole show's ruined.
Yeah.
You know, all you need is one piece to be missing. Mm-hmm. You know, one cable, one, like, microphone, one piece of the ring, and everything's just going to fall apart.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And Bob's one of those guys that knows how to find those pieces that you need to just have a show.
Right, yeah. I think I remember we were doing a show together one time in Charleston, and the ring broke, like, in the first match, and they had this big delay, and Bob was able to get to, like, the bottom of it in, like, 5 minutes. Like, nope, this is what we need to do. And he got out there, and I think they might have had to take the ropes down or something, but, I mean, he got it fixed. It was a long process, but it was about as quick as you can get it fixed. He got it fixed. So, mm-hmm. Bob's the man. But I went to his school in about April of 2008, and went there every Sunday, and then some Wednesdays and Thursdays. It got to the point where he was like, you got free reign. Anytime you want to come, just let me know so I can tell the wife, now ex-wife, that you're going to be here. And if you want, I don't have to be here. You can roll around. You can use the ring. You can do whatever you want. And so I started in April of 2008 training, and then I had my first match in July of 2008. So it was quick. I think I picked everything up relatively easily, but I think a lot of it is attributed to the fact that I was a lifelong fan. Mm-hmm. And I think if you truly are passionate about what we do, you're going to like want to be in the ring. You're going to want to learn. You're going to want to grow as a performer. And, you know, that's what it was for me. Like, you couldn't pull me out of the ring. I wanted to learn as much as I could.
It takes a bit of intelligence to look at something and dissect it, especially in the fast progress that you're talking about right there. It's something that I'm going through right now with, you know, stand-up comedy right now, and all the other new things that I'm learning, podcasting and everything else, is looking at something and being like, okay, this is what I do. How do I change this? This is good. I need to take that. But that critical thinking, mm-hmm. is that something that you always had yourself?
Yeah, I always like to think I was a pretty smart kid growing up. But I was very observant a lot. And, you know, I think that it was part of the reason I was kind of a quick learner with a lot of things. It was the fact that, like, I would beat myself up over a mistake, too. I mean, if I made one mistake, I'd be like, God, I got to fix that. Like, I can't do that again. And so, you know, that's really it. I mean, I was always a critical thinker. And, you know, yeah.
Yeah,
I agree with you. Yeah,
because the more you learn these things, or like every time you try something new and you try and figure it out, like there's some people that just do it, and I feel like they get along with like, oh, you know, I figured it out, and they're just going along, and then one day they just eat shit real bad, and I don't know why.
Yeah,
or I feel like, you know, the more intelligent you are, you see these potholes and you see them, and the more you notice these mistakes, you build up like, okay, I can't do this. Mm-hmm. Okay, I need more of this, or less of that, and stuff like that.
Yeah,
it's one of the things.
And I remember too, like, watching other people fail, or not fail necessarily, but I watched other people, like you said, fall down and make mistakes, and I was like, ooh, I don't ever want to be in that position. And so you kind of learn by watching others. But I also remember things like doing, again, shows with you, like in Charleston, when I was still kind of really, really, really green. You know, you would watch maybe an in-ring promo I did, and you'd be like, hey, you know, like, come here. And I, like, you called me over. I remember it in Charleston. You were like, your promo's good. You need to lay off a little bit of the Jericho stuff.
Yeah, because you were so much like Chris Jericho. You had the ponytail. Yeah. Like, it was so, yeah. And you had the cadence too.
Yeah.
Which, as I've learned now, is that's something we've all do.
Yeah.
You know, is that we all try and copulate our, you know, emulate our heroes.
Yeah.
And it turns out to be like that. And you don't even realize what you're doing. So I was probably a little bit rougher on you than I should have been when I said it.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, I appreciated the help. And I mean, I don't think it's a secret between me and you that we did kind of butt heads a little bit for a while.
Well,
yes?
Yeah, let's talk about this, because we talked about all the backstory. This is what I really want to get into. This is very Mark Maron-ish of me. Just take people that we butt heads with and then, you know, hash it all out in front of everybody else. But like, what was your, how did you see it? You know, like, why we butted heads? Because I've got a couple ideas, but I want to hear your ideas first.
I think maybe I was a little bit of a jerk.
Okay, then I take back everything I said.
But no, I think a lot of it, you can chalk it up to us maybe not communicating with one another, a series of misunderstandings, things may have been misconstrued, or he said, she said. You know, I really don't know, but there was like a series of events, I think, where I'd be like, God, man, Jake just, he hates me. He just doesn't like me, and I don't know why. Like, you know, but come to find out, you know, that's, you know, we both have that same kind of personality, and I think that's eventually why we got along, I guess. I'm not sure, but as far as a specific event, I remember the show that we did for PWX, like in Charlotte, where I think it was me and Aaron Epic versus Corey Hollis and Chip Day in the tag team tournament to crown champions or something. This was, we were in Charlotte at like a rec center. I think Rhett and Kenny worked Caleb and Cedric in like a street fight or something. Uh-huh. And I think we were given like 15 minutes for the tag match, and we might have gone, like, the ref is telling us, like, wrap it up, guys, take it home. And I was like, I don't think we're at 15 minutes yet. And then, of course, like, the time was like maybe 16 something, I don't know. We get to the back, and Ty, Sean, is like, Gosh, you guys went way over. You went way over on your time. And I go, Ty, you told us 15 minutes. We went maybe 16 minutes, but, you know, like, is it really that big of a deal? Wow, we got all these tags, man. Y'all went way over on time. And I was like, okay, well, I had missed my brother's graduation that day to be there. And so his college graduation. And so I was going to sell gimmicks at intermission, and I was going to try to get back on the road to get back home to at least hang out with him for his, like, after party or whatever you do after graduation. So I ended up, like, making my rounds, saying goodbye to everybody, like, and I think it was right before you were getting ready to go on or something like that. And I remember, like, the next week, I didn't think anything of it. I left, went home, show was still going on. Like, the next week or something, like, I get a message from, like, Bill Behrens, who's like,
oh, okay.
You remember this now?
I remember this message, but, like, I'm not exactly sure everything after this.
So he was like, so I heard at Ring of Honor this weekend that you have heat with the Man Scout. Do you care to tell me what this is all about? And I'm like, Bill, if I have heat with Jake Manning, that's news to me. I have no idea what you're talking about. So I think I, like, inboxed you on Facebook or something. I said, hey, if there's an issue, please call me. I'd like to talk to you about it. And then I think I missed your call. You left me a voicemail. You're like, hey, John, it's Jake. Give me a call. I'd like to talk to you. So I called you back. And then we hashed that out right there. Like, it was just like a thing where, and I understood when you told me that where you were coming from. You were like, well, you guys kind of went long. Then it looks bad.
Was I actually mad about that? Yes. Did I just say that?
A little
See,
bit.
See, I don't even remember being mad about that. Like, I remember a whole...
Okay, what do you remember?
I don't even remember exactly being, like, the contention about that being even an issue. I think there's a lot of stuff that was happening before all of that that was probably leading to, like, this very small, minor thing becoming maybe an issue. I don't know. That was also a very stressful time for me and a special stressful day for me because it was the ring, and I think, like, there was the kid that used to, we had, like, this young, like, 12-year-old kid training with us, and his mom was, like, a complete and utter just B-word, like, all day, every day, and I think she, like tried to fake an injury so she could sue the rec center, so we were in danger of losing that building. Like, that's how that day started.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, like she asked if she could sell concessions so she could make some money because she didn't make a lot of money.
Yeah.
But then she, like... she fell down, quote unquote, and we felt like she was milking an injury. So, like, and the thing is, like, my name, I think, was on the lease of renting the building with Tyshawn. So, like, I'm already dealing with all that stress. So, probably, like, you going over was not the least of the concerns. But I always remember the big issue with me. It was always back to, like, setting up the wrestling ring. I was there first, and this is something that I've had to learn about myself. And there's a lot of people that I've angered and pissed off, but I haven't hashed it out much like I have with you, is that, you know, I work for High Spots and I'm supposed to bring this ring, but at the same time too, I'm setting up this ring so we can have this show.
Sure.
And there's a lot of bag rollers, as I like to call. They just roll their bags in, and it was a lot of guys. Like, that's why, like, worst case scenario, Ethan Case and Elijah got over with me so strong, is they got there, they helped set up the ring, and they helped tear it down. I was like, you guys are booked on every show. Because I needed that help.
Sure.
But at the same time, too, from an outsider's perspective, I've been on other shows and, like, I don't want to deal with the ring and all this stuff. And you were doing that stuff already with Bob and other places like that. So you're probably like, PWX is fine and the High Spots guys. And I almost think that somebody might have told you that we were getting paid to set up that ring, which was not the case.
I don't remember if anybody told me that guys were getting paid, but I do. Like you said, I remember thinking, well, like, they've got plenty of guys on the ring. I think at this point, all I'm going to do is get in the way. I'll stay.
See, and that's another thing I've learned too, is that because of my aggressive behavior around people, I realized that I scared off a lot of help, and then I would get mad at people for not helping.
Yeah.
Like, that was, like, the vicious circle that I was dealing with at that time.
And some of those ring jobs were brutal too. Like, a neighborhood theater had to be a big pain in the ass because of the floor.
I had to build stilts on the ring. Mm-hmm. And I think I remember it was one time, like, it was probably Lodi was some other guys that wanted to help, and he pulled them aside and said, hey, they're getting paid to do that. Don't help them.
Oh, wow.
I don't think that was you, but you were. But I remember him saying that to somebody else that was sitting next to you on that stage. So I lumped you in with those group of people.
And I think I was working a lot with Lodi at the time.
Exactly.
Too,
so I was thinking, like, oh, you're buddy-buddy with him, and you think I'm getting paid for this ring when I ain't getting shit. And, I'm building this ring and building stilts for us just to have a wrestling show and hear you rolling your bag in and doing whatever.
Yeah.
You know? And of course, you know, like Sean was always very accommodating to Lodi, and he'd always put himself in a good spot. Therefore, you ended up a good spot because he wanted somebody good to wrestle, which I was that before you. So I should have saw that coming as well. Right. But I was like, goddamn, Skylar gets a good spot on the fucking show. Not realizing it was Lodi, you know, begging Tyshawn for that spot. And you were just along for the ride.
And can I say just real quick on a little sidebar here that at the time, I truly and honestly hated doing PWX shows. I was, I did not enjoy doing them because, it just seemed like a big hassle. I didn't think anybody liked me. Like, Sean was always saying, we're going to do this with you, and then we're going to do that with you, and it's the classic promoter.
He did that
crap
to everybody. Yeah. Everybody.
Where you get your expectations built up, and we talk about this all the time. You set your expectations high about what's going to happen when you get there and what you're going to do, and then you always get let down.
Because it's pro wrestling.
Yeah. So I remember, too, like, Lodi, when me and Lodi had our I Quit match, like, he got hot at me because I almost said, I'm not coming. Like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do the whole PWX thing anymore.
But see, and that also goes back to what I did to you the show before. I think it was involved in like a six-man tag, and you guys got like color, and I didn't know it.
Yeah, and Grizz didn't know it either, and Grizz got really hot about that too.
And I was mostly sticking up for Grizz because I felt like I was a locker room leader, and also too, I wasn't quite as hot about it as Grizz was, but I felt like I need to back my partner up, and I'm a locker room leader, and I need to fucking say something.
And and from me and Lodi's standpoint, what we saw was we got there, and our angle was being kind of fused together with what you guys were doing with Corey and Chip.
Which is the same exact way we felt.
Yep, and maybe none of us asked to be in this match.
Yes.
So we were all put in this match, and then me and Lodi kind of get there, and I think you were still putting up the ring and doing everything, the Jake Manning duties of the day, and I think you came up to, or we came up to you, and you said, Grizz has it all figured out, go talk to Grizz. So when we go to talk to Grizz, Grizz had kind of put y'all's stuff together, and then when me and Lodi are like, well, what do you guys want us to do? I think Grizz was kind of like, just do whatever you want. Like, this is what we're doing. And then y'all will fight off through the crowd. Y'all be done. We'll do the finish.
Yeah, because I think we had it structure that it was just going to go all over the place.
It's like a bunkhouse brawl.
We're going to do our stuff. We'll get out. You guys get in, do your stuff. We're not going to tell you guys to do, because it was very much like two angles put in one match. So we were just structuring it that way. Yeah. But I'm sure the way that Grizz was telling you came off like, we don't give a fuck what you do.
Yeah,
you know what
and
saying?
That's I think that's what pissed Lodi off, because Lodi was like, well, we've worked just as hard on our angle as they have theirs. Why are they trying to push our stuff to the side? And this is just what
really was
at the time.
What we were trying to do. We were just trying to get, here's your, which I believe telling Grizz that, like, hey, let them get their time, let them do their stuff, and then we'll do our stuff, and then we'll just cycle through. Because I felt like, you know, I always saw the ring as the stage.
Yep.
That's your guys get stage time whenever you guys do whatever you guys want to do, then we'll go that. And I felt like that was the most democratic thing, but I'm sure Grizz probably didn't pitch it as well as you probably should have.
Yeah, and Lodi was like, well, they said we could do whatever we want, so what do you want to do? You want to get color? And I go, I like to save that kind of stuff. And Lodi was like, I'm going to get color. If you want to get color, we can just, that'll be our contribution.
Yeah, because I think you and me feel the same exact way on color. And like, it was during all that time of like, us all kind of waking up like, hey, you
this
can get
is,
seriously
yeah,
sick
this
by
is
all
not
this.
A good idea. Yeah. Cutting yourself is not, especially on a mat that sometimes gets cleaned, sometimes you never know what other somebody else might have. And me and you have had some bloody matches, but we always said, like, going into it, I've been tested, I'm good, we can do this if you want. If you don't want to, completely understand. Mm-hmm. So we do the match, me and Lodi get color, we do our thing where we brawl through the crowd, we come to the back. You guys are just about finishing up in the ring. And, like, I'm the first one Grizz sees, and me trying to just say thank you, thank you, thank you. Grizz goes, why'd you get color? And I'm like, well, I mean, I don't know. It was bunk out. He goes, you don't know. You don't know why you got color. You just decided to – like, he was being very confrontational. And I was like, dude, I'm sorry. Like, we didn't – you guys didn't really tell us anything to do. You didn't give us any instructions. So we just kind of took it upon ourselves. And he goes, yeah, don't ever do that again. Like, and he was very hot about it. Now, me and Grizz – are also on tremendous terms. Like, I love that guy. Mm-hmm. Like, we've gotten along great since then. And that was just that little thing. But continue on with maybe where we were maybe it was that it, or was there something else maybe that I would have done?
No, like I don't know if I yelled at you too much, but I felt like I had to yell at Lodi as well, because I felt like Grizz yelled at you adequately, and I go, I don't want it to look like we're only yelling at John. We need to yell at fucking Lodi as well.
Yeah.
So I think he might have got more than you did, but I believe I made it a point that's like, I'm not afraid to talk to you, motherfucker, and also to fuck you. Right? Like, it's like, yeah. was the point. So I feel like there was that going on a lot. And like I said, like, you were getting put in good spots because Lodi would position himself and such, and you were along for the ride. And that's something I never saw. And then also too, like, that whole thing about like the ring and me seeing that and you getting lumped in that group. Mm-hmm. I think there was a lot of perception, like, looking back on it, there was a lot of perception going on.
Sure. And it may not have also helped that I was coming up pretty much every Wednesday with Lodi to train at High Spots, where we were training a handful of people, or having just sessions at High Spots, and I would see you like pretty much regularly once or twice a week maybe, and I'd be like, hey Jake, and you'd be like, hey, and then
I'm at work, Jake is just I'm working on two computers at a time. I think that time I might have been working on four.
Yeah.
So like, I was under a lot of pressure, a lot of stress. Also too, I was in a really bad place personally. Like, I was probably in a relationship that should have... I think about the time where it got very contentious with it was, is definitely the year that I should have broke it off with this girl. I had a 3-year relationship. It should have only lasted for 2, maybe 8 months, to be really quite honest. But I stretched it out to 3 because I felt like I was trapped. And that last year was just utter misery and just awfulness.
Yeah.
And just like, you know, it was just awful feeling. I felt like I deserved, as bad as I felt like I deserved every bit of it. And I felt like my career was over at that time. Like, I felt like I'd fucked it all up. I'm not going to be around long enough when we're in this boom that we're at right now.
Yeah.
And all these things, like, I was going through so many insecurities and so many like demons. Mm-hmm. Luckily, the one thing I will say about being in that relationship, I couldn't get fucking drunk every night, which is something I eventually did later.
But that's the fun stuff though.
Yeah.
And now you're in a great relationship.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So. And I feel like that was the thing, but I think a big thing that helped me get through a lot of that. Cause like that, I think that phone conversation, you reaching out, like, I don't know how Bill Barron's heard anything, I don't know if it was that show that you went over on, or where he would have got, but trust me, there was enough things probably said in locker rooms around people that would squeal the Bill Barons that it would get back to you eventually.
Sure. Yeah. Cause I remember thinking initially that it was Corey that probably said something.
I'm sure.
Yeah. He's a child.
Yeah. Like, especially then.
Yeah, he's going to get so mad that we just said that.
Well, but like, I was one probably spewing, you know, visceral hate towards you. Yeah. Like, all the fucking time. And so I'm sure he caught wind of something at some moment in time.
Yeah. So the next thing that I really remember is it got to a point where we were kind of on speaking terms, but it was not like I wasn't going to send you a Christmas card. Kind of just like, hey, Jake. Hey,
I felt like we could tolerate ourselves' existence.
I think we came to a mutual understanding.
I think that probably... Yeah. Pushed all of this along as well as it did. Like, I wasn't going to do that.
Yeah.
I was too stubborn. So you probably doing that probably at least was the right first step.
I think we had a mutual understanding that, you know, we weren't going to be buddy-buddy. And then we come up to the show where Steve Corino and his elaborate idea of let's have the fans randomly draw the names for the tag team tournament, and they'll pick the tag teams. It'll be completely random. It'll all be a shoot.
Yeah.
We won't know who's going over. We won't know who's teaming with who.
Because we had to roll to see who won. The fans drew who were the teams.
Yeah, so like, it was like the VIP ticket holders. Yes. Part of their package was they got to pick the names for this tag team tournament. It was like Lethal Lottery style to crown new tag team champions, where the fans would say wrestler number one is so-and-so, wrestler and his partner is so-and-so. And it was a complete shoot. Like, we had no idea what we were doing. We're all lined up at ringside. And I remember I was getting ready to leave for England for my first tour over there in the UK. And Zane Riley in the pre-show meeting goes, all right, I'll be the guy that says it. What if fucking John Schuyler wins this thing? And Steve goes, we'll figure it out. But really, what are the chances of that happening?
Yeah. And the thing is, even funnier about that, I was like, it was still content. Like, we could tolerate being in locker room with each other, but the idea of us being a tag team, and then also the idea that you're going to go off to England, and also too, still very bitter at that time. Of course, this motherfucker's going to England. I'm staying fucking here in the fucking shit of it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I just look right at Steve. When he pitched the whole idea, I'm like, I better not be fucking tagging with Skyler.
Yeah.
Was the exact words when he, as soon as he like, hey, we're gonna do this. Okay, well, I better not be fucking tagging with Skyler.
So I got an even better story that day because it was like a 4 o'clock show.
Yes.
Or something.
It was a Sunday afternoon show.
I was at my buddy Todd's house watching baseball because he lived like 15 minutes from the building, and I was like, oh, man, I really don't want to go to this show. I'm sitting there watching this. I think the Cubs were playing, and I'm like, but it's a 4 o'clock show. I'll be in and out of there. I can be home by like 7:30, 8 o'clock. And he goes, well, didn't you, like, I kind of explained to him what the gimmick was. And he goes, well, like, you could possibly be wrestling three times. I go, that's not going to happen. I go, worst case scenario is I'm wrestling three times and I'm teaming with Jake Manning. And it was like a death nail in my coffin because we get there, they're drawing the names, and then like I think we're like the second match or something, they go, and the next wrestler is the Man Scout Jake Manning, and I'm sitting on the apron, just I had this feeling come across me, I go, it's gonna be me and his tag team partner, the Southern Savior John Skyler. And I remember like I got right in the ring, and I got right in your face, and we went nose to nose, and it was kind of like even the boys were kind of like, oof.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think we've had many a curtain sellout through our careers.
And then I remember you looking right past me, looking at Steve, going, thank you for this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I didn't pay attention to you. Yeah. Like, the first person I went to was Steve, and I just see him look like.
Oh. And then we ended up drawing or rolling the dice.
It could have just been like one match of like, oh, whatever, this was a funny little thing. No, we won the next match.
And then we won the third match and became the new tag team champions. And I mean, if there's ever like an incredible story about like how things just happen,
yeah,
I think that's it. Because who would have ever thought that we would end up getting randomly put together, randomly winning this tournament, and then randomly having this awesome angle that we ended up having.
Because that's what I knew. If I got teamed with you, then we have to feud with each other. And it wasn't so much that I'd be a tag team. It's like, I know I've got another 3 months on the back half of this run.
Yeah.
Even if it ends tomorrow, I got another 3 months with this guy.
Yeah.
And I'm just trying to give him his space. I just want my space.
Yeah.
You know, and he just... And then this is happening.
Yeah.
And then also, too, like, he's going away for a few months, so that's going to even delay us even getting to this.
Yeah.
Like, and it was just like, how did this happen?
So then, you know, I do the tour of England. I come back. You've got – and I think you were kind of taking things over at this point creatively, maybe.
Yes. This was a very stressful time for me because, like, Ty had left.
We were doing TV.
Yeah. And, all this stuff was happening, and I didn't agree with all this, but I wasn't paying the bills, but I'm trying to make sure the people that are paying the bills are making things on time. At this time, like I'm probably full blown alcoholic. I am having a half a bottle of whiskey every night just to go to bed.
Yeah,
like that's like my life was just going through that and just like a rush to get home to get just absolutely plastered and then go to bed and just living life hungover, waiting to get to the next drink, hungover, and just cycling through.
Yeah.
And then being very angry about my career, being very angry that there's no fluctuation in wrestling whatsoever, and then all this is happening.
Yeah.
And then I've got to deal with all the stress of making sure I don't have to come up with just my finish. I have to come up with a finish of seven other matches, book the people, deal with the emails.
You deal with the egos of, I don't want to do this, blah, 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 blah.
All of that. And then also, too, like, you're off in England. I now have to find a creative way to defend these tag team belts. But at the same time, too, I've taken over things. But now my thought process was, I defend the tag team belts by myself, and then our first defense back, we lose them. I felt like that was a far compelling story. But the thing is, now I'm the booker, and I'm tag team champions by myself, and I'm winning.
Yeah.
So I'm like, how's this looking?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I'm dealing with that stress, and I'm just dealing with all of it. You come back, and then we lose the belts, and then I was like, now I got to deal with this feud. And I just remember just being utterly and completely stressed out the whole time. And I remember it was like our first like one-on-one match after that's going to kick off this whole feud, and it's just going to kind of be a thing to set up. And I remember being utterly stressed out because there was a couple people that weren't happy about their finish that day, had to deal with a little bit of drama, had to do a little political maneuvering. We had other stuff going on. We had like big name people, and we had to make some adjustments. We had to make some changes. It was just a stressful day all around. And by the time I got to the point that I'm dressed and I'm going to go over my match, I just looked at you and I was like dead. I was like, I don't know what the fuck I can do. And you saved me.
Yeah.
I remember you just kind of like doing for me what I've done for a lot of people. And I got this. We'll do this. We'll do this. And it just kind of laid some stuff out because I was burnt. Like, yeah. it was going to be awful. I was going to just explode.
Yeah.
At that moment in time, but you picked me up and you got me through that match. I think Steve was our ref that night, and you just led us through that whole match and just did for me that I'd done for so many people so many times. And like, I was like, wow, that I needed that. And I felt good about where we're going to go. Like, I think that took, you know, the conversation took a little bit of edge off. Like, that was just like, okay, at least I can count on him in the ring.
Yeah.
We may not like each other, but I can count on him on the ring 100%.
When it's time to do business.
Yes. Yeah. And I can rely on him to pick me up when I'm falling down and stumbling here.
And thank you for that. Wow. And then I also remember thinking that you were completely crazy that you wanted me to lash you 10 times with a leather belt. After all of this, I'm thinking to myself, man, this guy is absolutely insane. Like, and I was even telling my buddies, like, in the guys that are in the business, like, you know, like Gunner and Corey and all these other people, I'm like, we're doing this thing where I'm going to lash him with a leather belt. And they're like, ooh. And I remember, like, when we put that together, you were like, really milk the first one. Knock 2, 3, and 4 out of the way. Really milk that fifth one. Go ahead, do 6, 7, and 8.
Because I'd already like mentally figured out how it was going to go and mentally figured out where I'm going to put my emotions through all of it. Like, I'd like hypnotize myself, like, just do it exactly like this and I will be fine.
Yeah, and I remember doing like the promo where I'm yelling at you the entire time that I'm doing this, and then, you know, I hit you with number 10, and then, you know, that's where I think I said for the first time, champ of the week, hurdle the dead, and I, wham, just get you, you know, a couple more times for good measure. And then they got that great shot of me kind of backing out of the ring on TV. But I remember thinking, like, right then and there, that's like, I felt like that's when we were truly off to the races with the angle, because I was like, man, that was some good shit right there. And I remember even, like, Chris Hamrick, I mean, he was like, damn, that was great. Like, that was some of the most best heel stuff I've ever seen, you know, you whipping Jake like a dog and all that kind of stuff. And obviously it was inspired by Tommy Dreamer and Raven, Tommy Dreamer and Sandman, or
yeah, it was Sandman.
Yeah, Sandman.
No, don't get me wrong. The Tommy Dreamer and Raven is very confusing with our angle.
Yes, absolutely. And then that almost kind of, we did the dream partner thing for a while where we do a series of matches around the loop, brother, where we'd pick
I feel like that would buy us a little bit of time because I didn't want like big angles to come up at certain times.
Sure.
That's kind of what was the idea, is that each show a big angle could happen and cycle through. So the dream partner thing was just to buy a little bit of time for us.
My favorite of which was definitely me and Kevin Steen versus you and the Hurricane.
That was
such a fun match.
It was such a weird fucking thing. And everybody didn't get it. And was like, why is this going on? What is happening? Yeah. Like, no. Because I just wanted to get to the image of like Kevin turning on you, me, Kevin, and Hurricane doing the hero pose. Like, I was like, that's the moment I want to get to.
I remember, too, like for some reason during the heat of that match, like Kevin tags me in and I give you what has got to be the laziest snapmare of all time, where I just kind of like do like a half crunch and kind of bring you over. I didn't drop to a knee. I didn't like put my body into it or anything. And I remember Hurricane, when we got to the back, he goes, that was an awful snap, man, John Scott. Hell, that wasn't even a man. That was just a fucking man, John Scott. There was no snap to it. That was the laziest snap man I've ever seen in my life. So, but that was good. And then that led us into the big match, the I Quit, which was fun. That was Rise of a Champion in this building that we're at.
Yes.
Cabarrus. So, and I mean, that was awesome too. That was so much fun. So much fun.
Yeah, definitely one of my favorite matches of all time. And you just the trust of you going through a table to the floor with a pile driver.
Yeah.
Like to me, like whatever, like for you to feel like, oh, this guy's got to be crazy. That's the exact same feeling that I felt about you taking that.
Yeah.
That like, this guy's got to be crazy.
Yeah.
To allow me to do this to him after everything we've been through, like, and everything that he's going to allow me to safely guide him. Because this could go really bad. He could fall. He could, like, break his neck.
I definitely said a little prayer when I was upside down with my eyes closed.
And I was like, listen, if you don't want to do it, but, like, you were game and you know, took care of you. And it worked out well.
We both bled a lot. That was the time to do all the gushers and stuff.
I just got tested to be down in Louisiana, so I knew I was fresh. I was in a committed relationship. I wasn't doing any needles, none of that, nothing. Hadn't bled since then. So, I felt like this is a time, like, hey, I'm tested, I'm good. So you don't have to worry about me.
Yeah. And shortly thereafter, you kind of disappeared for a little while, right?
I was pushed out. Actually, before that match happened, because after the 10 Lashings match, they told me that the talent could not book the shows because they were afraid that I was going to book myself in a position of favor. Even though I booked myself to lose a 10 Lashes match, yeah. is the most
it's
ironic.
Very favorable on your part.
Yeah, trust me. If there's any way to book it any other way around, I would have lashed you.
I wish I could
and then went over the
I wish I could be the booker of a territory so I can book myself to get lashed on my ass
just to
times.
Get somebody over.
Yeah.
Who I had a contentious relationship with for the last like several years. You know?
But you went away or you were pushed out, and then I firmly believe, and I've said this, I've actually got a podcast too now that I'm kind of dabbling in a little bit, which is we ended up coming back with a pretty hot angle 2 years later, and with the Revolt, the experience, which culminated in what has got to be my favorite match that I've definitely had this year and definitely that I've ever had at PWX, and that's the match that we had in June.
Yeah.
At Another Level or whatever it was, because... And I've told you this off camera, you know, you can sit, for me, I can sit back as an artist and watch like the last 5 minutes of that over and over and over and over again. And it's like, I remember watching Sting beat Ric Flair for the world title for the first time at Great American Bash, and how the crowd in the arena jumps to their feet in celebration mm-hmm. for the first time in like Sting's career. And I remember if you go back and watch that match, when you finally... You roll me. They do the thing. We do the thing with George and Brian, where he punches Brian. Crowd goes ballistic. You roll me up. They jump to their feet that first time because you roll me up, and it's a near fall. And they go, "Oh!" And there's people literally standing there with their hands on their heads, like, "What? That's not it. Like that was perfect." And then we come right back around, right into the where you gave me the Mr. Perfect Jerry Lawler into the ring post, and then I turn around, you pedigree me, and 1, 2, 3, and like Sting and Flair. That looks like the whole crowd just jumps to their feet in celebration. I mean, they were legitimately happy that you finally pulled it out and you finally won the big one or whatever.
Well, and also too, I'm coming off a 2-year losing streak.
Yeah.
You know, I'd set myself up for that. I'd went crazy a little bit and went on a tangent of stuff.
Yeah.
And when I came back, I was already immersed in this under for life thing that I'm just losing. 'Cause I wanted to build to something at a different promotion, and they didn't believe in me. And I'll never forget, it was the December before the June show, and I just had a feeling like, because we were talking about who the next champ might be, and I go, oh fuck, I think it makes sense that I am. And I was just coming back, like I was going to be there in War Games, and I was going to be done.
Yeah,
I thought, just do the War Games, and I was going to kind of like dip out of the way and just kind of do comedy matches. And then all of a sudden, that December, I was like, oh fuck. I'm gonna have to like do this, you know. I'm gonna have to be a main event guy on these shows where people are killing themselves.
Dude, I did it for a year, man, and it's so stressful because I remember like literally throwing, you know, my hat in my bag at one show because the second or third match was out there and they were doing so much stuff, and I was just like, God, why am I gotta be last on all these shows?
Yeah.
Like I was getting so hot about being in the last match every night. It's definitely a tough position.
Yeah, nobody understands that responsibility that you have to be that guy, and everybody's here out killing themselves, and that's fine, and that's great, and we should encourage that environment. But nobody's thinking about the main event. Nobody's thinking about, and it's like it doesn't. It's the time thing that bothers me. You can do every spot underneath the sun in 10 minutes or 12 minutes, and that's fine. Yeah. It's when you go
35 minutes over
that it's just frustrating to have to deal with.
Which made, I think, even our last match together at Another Level that much more special because we were last. And if you look on paper, the names that were on that show, the Cedric Alexanders, was Roddy on that show? I mean, I can't remember.
Roddy was on that show. It was Marty Scurll and Cedric was right before us.
Yeah.
And I always feel, and the thing is too, you felt the pressure. I felt the pressure. And I don't think anybody remembers who Cedric wrestled on that show.
But the crazy thing is, if you looked at our names on the card on that particular night going into it on paper, Jake Manning and John Schuyler would not be the match that you would think would go on last and steal the show after all that great talent that was on the card. And I'm watching, as we're talking about putting this match together, I'm watching everybody else, and they're talking for 30 and 45 minutes about their matches. And we put ours together in like 10 minutes.
It was, you know, and it comes full circle back to the first time we wrestled when Steve was the ref, that it just as easy as that match was put together, like that's how easy that our last match was. And that's what I thought was remarkable. Like when after we talked about it for like 6 minutes, I was like, yeah, that feels right.
That's it.
We know exactly what we need to do. We did it. We made it out. We got it.
Yeah.
We're good.
Yeah.
And I was like, and there was a little bit of a calm there. Like, no, this is going to be good because it should be this easy. Yeah. We know exactly what we need to do.
Yeah. Yeah. So much fun, man. And I almost had a little bit of a depression after that because it was so good that I was like, I'll never have another match that gets that kind of reaction at PWX ever again. And it kind of was just like a little bit of a, I don't know, like a post-day depression type thing. I was like, man, it was so good that how am I ever going to top that? So that's kind of why I decided to step away for a little bit and come back a little bit fresh now. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
And here we are.
Exactly. Here we are sitting down. We can actually talk to each other on camera and stuff like that. But it's just one of those things when you do something so big, it's almost like a postpartum depression, like after like a woman has like a child in a sense. They feel that sense of loss sometimes physically and stuff like that. But that's something that us as artists, we feel that we put something out in the world like, yeah, I think I nailed that. And then there's that feeling of, can I ever do that again? Was that it? Was that the peak? And then you start thinking, like, critical thinkers, we start dissecting things that way.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll drive you nuts.
Yeah, it will. It will. Yeah. And you need that time away. But all that stress. But like, I just remember that match. Like, I was hoping that after the match, I would feel this wash of like, I accomplished something because it was the end of this 2-year angle. It was kind of the end of us being angry. And I almost didn't want to like do the whole shake the hands and be the friends thing. But like, I feel like that. Looking back on it, that was the best decision, and I didn't see it.
The post-match handshake is so overdone nowadays. Like
it really is. I know you feel it, but looking back on it, I'm glad we did that.
Because it was kind of symbolic, I think, and these guys have been feuding together 4 years now or whatever it was. Yeah. That's the end. It's over.
And something that I learned after that match about myself, you know, because I do a lot of things, and there's, you know, and as I accomplish more and more, you know, now, because now has been a very good year for me. I mean, since then, a lot of things have happened very good to me. And something that I learned, especially that night, is that, you know, I was waiting for that good feeling to come when the bell rung. And it was great and everything all that happened, and I kind of felt that. But the thing that I remember the most is afterwards, the people, the hug and the handshake with you and I afterwards, like, it's the people that were surrounded with that was the most important thing.
Absolutely.
The fact that I share that now with you after everything that we had been through, that means more to me. And then probably that match does. It's people at the end of the day. It's the friendships you make. You know what I'm saying?
It's the journey.
Exactly.
And the journey to get there.
And we had to fight for a friendship. Mostly each other for it.
It was a hard fight, but I'm glad we went through it. And I'm glad, you know, I'm a better person for having gone through all that.
Yeah.
And that goes way past wrestling, too.
Yeah.
I think more understanding of people and their situations, maybe from day to day. We don't know what we go through. You know, I have no idea. You know, I had no idea about some of the issues that you were having at the time. You probably felt, you know, the same about, you know, you didn't know that I was running around trying to do all this stuff to appease everybody. So you don't really know what somebody else is going through. So you need to be a little bit, you know, I don't know, understanding and open-minded about, hey, okay, that guy might be a jerk today, but you don't know what his backstory is.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's like life lessons, man, in pro wrestling. Yeah. So
we went through it.
We did it.
We got here.
Yeah.
But
I'm very thankful for it.
Me too. We're very close to the end here, and you know we got a show yet tonight and stuff like that. But that was most of the talk that I wanted to have. You know, because you know, not that I'm like, oh, we should put this out into the public, into the world. But I feel like our story is a story that most people need to know about. Because like I said, there were a lot of like curtain sellouts. Like these guys don't like each other, and then. Just be us being professionals.
It's very easy to cut promos on you at times.
Especially that one where I just said, like, I'm going to fuck you up. Like, that one felt really good. And it was one line, but like, I felt like, and I was like, I got nothing more to say to you that I'm going to do this. But like, I think it's important that people listen to the story that if you just be professional and understanding people's like what's going on in their lives, like they can come full circle and like in understanding that, you know, like I said, and I think this conversation was very important that way.
Sure.
So, but very close to the end, we got a lot of stuff we have to do yet tonight, but I can't let you off the hook.
Yep.
I can't let you.
This
was coming.
I've listened to your podcast. I listened to the one with Steve. I listened to the one with Adam Page, the Bravados. I've listened to a couple of them. So.
Okay. But you're doing a lot of stuff. You're a young man. You have a very bright future ahead of you. But when it comes to topic of success, what does it mean to you? Do you have a dollar amount attached to it? Do you have a specific goal? Do you know what it is? Do you chase it every day? Do you have a clear shot of it right now? When I say the word success, what does it mean to you, John Schuyler?
Success to me, and this might just sound crazy, but it's going to come, the day's going to come when I can hopefully look at my children, my wife, and just have something to hang my hat on and say, that's it. I'm good. I don't have to do, you know, I don't have to bend over backwards pursuing a career, breaking my body or anything like that. I'm good. You know, it's I think it's as simple as that. I don't think there's a dollar amount attached to success. I do like to make money, mm-hmm. but who doesn't? But I definitely think there's some sort of like just internal satisfaction of, I just think that's it. I think it's an internal, something you can hang your hat on and just be like.
The fact that you left no doubt.
That you left no doubt. Yes, absolutely.
Whether you 100%. Failed or you won, the fact that I did pro wrestling.
And you did it your way or
yeah.
my way.
Yeah. Like you're not asking like, I wish I would have done that or I should have, you know. No. You know, yeah. It's the fact that like, no, whatever I did, I did it the way it was going to happen.
Yep, absolutely.
It's a very zen way to look at it.
Yeah.
But anyways, John, you know, please plug whatever you need to do. Plug your podcast, plug your website, plug this Pro Wrestling Tee Store, whatever yeah. it is. This is the time you have a live microphone. You're a performer. You know what to do.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at the John Skyler, Skyler. Facebook fan page, The Southern Savior John Skyler. Everything Instagram is, it's kind of all the same. I do have a Pro Wrestling Tee Store. You can pick up the John Skyler Preach the Truth, Trample the Week t-shirt, which is very, very, very popular. And along with like the Extreme Horseman t-shirts, there's a lot of cool stuff on Pro Wrestling Tees. I got a lot of good things coming up in 2017 I'm really excited about. Actually debuting with Ring of Honor on January the 14th. So that's going to be fun. That's going to be at Center Stage in Atlanta. Yeah, I mean, you'll never know really where myself and maybe Corey now, because he's kind of tags along with me, mm-hmm. You'll never know where we'll pop up. I think 2016 was a good indication of that, and hopefully 2017 is very much the same.
All right. Well, John, I'm glad we got to have this conversation, and hopefully people enjoyed listening to it, and they could look at that person that they don't particularly like and Thank shake you. Hands with them at the
shake
end of the day.
Shake hands at the end of the day. Thank you very much for
Thank
having
you.
Me.
DSCT.TV production.